Welcome, viewers and listeners, to CHP Talks. We're here again with a repeat guest, MP Kathy Wagenthal from the district of Yorkton-Melville, Saskatchewan. Thank you, Kathy, for joining us today.
Very glad to be here, Rod.
And just let folks know, Kathy Wagenthal is a businesswoman and administrator. She was first elected in 2015 as Member of Parliament for Yorkton-Melville, Saskatchewan, for the Conservative Party of Canada, and was re-elected, backed by popular demand, in 2019 and 2021. In her parliamentary work, Kathy has been committed to standing up for the most vulnerable in society and working to defend and protect fundamental rights, such as freedom of conscience, religion, belief, and expression. She has been a member of the Interparliamentary Committee on Ending Human Trafficking in Canada and a member of the Parliamentary Pro-Life Caucus. In her first year as Member of Parliament, she tabled a private member's bill entitled Cassie and Molly's Law, which sought to protect mothers and their preborn children. She later introduced her second private member's bill, the Sex Selective Abortion Act, C-233, which would have made it an offense for a medical practitioner to perform an abortion knowing that the abortion is sought solely on the grounds of the child's sex. She recently introduced her third private member's bill, I think it's your third, Kathy, C-311, which is the Violence Against Pregnant Women Act, and that's one of the things we want to talk about today. Kathy is passionate about building community among believers and taking action for the persecuted church. In 2019, she became chair of Canada's National Prayer Breakfast and served a four-year term. And that's, for those who don't know about that, it's a tremendous annual event in Ottawa. I've had the privilege of attending several times and hope to go this year as well. Kathy and her husband, Marty, have been married 45 years, almost 46. They have three married children, 10 grandchildren, and together they planted and pastored churches in Lloydminster and Edmonton. Kathy is dedicated to serving the Lord and the people of Canada, and it's a real privilege today, Kathy, to have you back on CHP Talks.
Thank you.
So you, you've brought forward three private members' bills. I think you've had extraordinary percentage in terms of having the opportunity to present these bills. Not every backbench MP gets the opportunity to bring forward three bills in a couple of terms in office.
Right.
That's significant,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, actually what happens is every time there's an election and a change in government, a new parliament, everyone's name goes in a hat except for ministers and parliamentary secretaries, and based on your number is when you get to bring one forward. And of course, it takes a great deal of time for these to move through the House. So if you're up above, I'd say even 125 out of the 275 or so, your name may have been drawn, but you will not get that opportunity. So I've been very blessed three times to be chosen in that first it was number 11, I think, and then in the 30s, and now I'm 61, I believe. So I'm now bringing my third bill forward.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. And I think those in the pro-life movement, those who are committed to the cause of protecting innocent human life, are really thrilled and, totally respect that you have used your time in office to protect the vulnerable and the innocent. And in this case, C-311, which you introduced on January 31st, is Violence Against Pregnant Women Act. So you are, this act is designed to protect pregnant women who are in a particularly vulnerable position. What can you tell us about how the bill came to be brought forward and your thoughts about it?
Sure, thank you. Well, this is in some ways very similar to Cassie and Molly's Law in that it specifically focuses on pregnant women and their vulnerable state when they are pregnant. It involves, again, a third party attacking that woman, knowing that she's pregnant. That's the first concern. And then secondly, causing physical or emotional harm. And these two aggravating factors is what we call them, are not required to be considered in a case where a woman is either murdered or abused in some way or attacked. And so this bill, the whole purpose is that once a trial has taken place and sentencing is to be done, it would require that the judge consider the fact that that woman is pregnant and that the individual who attacked her was aware of that and or caused physical or emotional damage. So it is more specific than Cassie and Molly's law in its request. It's not, you know, demanding a certain sentence or anything like that. It's simply saying, listen, we're failing our pregnant women who are carrying their children to term and growing their families in these circumstances where quite often it is, you know, a partner who does cause this issue of either a murder of that woman and her child, or you know, can cause harm to her, and yet that child can die, and you know, that's simply an assault charge. So we're calling on our judges to take a firmer stance in the fact that we need to recognize that these women are in extremely, you know, vulnerable circumstances, and we should be doing far better to protect them. And within the House of Commons, of course, every party insists that, you know, they're very concerned about protecting pregnant women and that they are extremely vulnerable. So there's no excuse really for not supporting this bill.
Yes. I think I read in some of your writings on your website that in recent years, 80 pregnant women have been murdered in Canada.
That's right.
Of course,
That's
that's
right.
the death of two human beings. You and I know that. Not everyone recognizes that, but certainly pregnant women are more vulnerable. And in a sense, sometimes it is the motivation for the attack, the fact that she is pregnant, and we've seen that over and over. Cassie and Molly's law addressed that. So did Roxanne's law, Rod Bernouche's bill of some years earlier.
Can-Ep
Yeah.
as well. Yeah, it's been before the House many times, and as we know, Rod, you know, the excuse has always been that it is just a backdoor to preventing abortion, which of course it isn't, because it is a public safety bill. And what's exciting to me is that as I've presented these bills in the House of Commons, Canadians have become more aware of the fact that there are no laws, that's true, but they are also more and more aware of the political actions of a number of parties that, you know, their whole focus is on abortion, and we see how that drive is there to basically devalue life. And so this bill, you know, it does hit them where it hurts, I think, because the pro-choice community, I can affirm, you know, are tired, as well as the pro-life community, of being used as political tools. Because actually, the majority of Canadians, 84%, do not want to see pregnant women attacked and this protection not be in place, along with wanting a law against sex selective abortion and late term abortions. There's many things where Canadians agree. And so that's my goal in my heart here, is that to put an end to this abuse, really, of Canadians' views in the House of Commons.
Have you had any positive response from any a member of the Liberal or the NDP caucus, the Greens,
Yeah,
Bloc?
any other party, actually. As you know, the Conservative Party is the only party that I can run as a candidate in a nomination, because this is a rule that they have now that you cannot join their party, which is incredibly undemocratic. But you know, I did present it in the House, huge support on my side of the floor within our party. But that morning, of course, there's not a lot of people in the room. It's not like during question period or votes when everybody gets there. We all have other things we need to do as well. But I was incredibly pleased to see that the three women that were in the House that were Liberals also clapped extensively for the bill as I presented it. So that was reassuring in knowing that they understand and they know that this is something that needs to be done.
Right. Do you think if there were even one member in one of the other parties that that had strong feelings in, you know, supporting the bill, that they would, because it's not an anti-abortion bill, it is a pro-woman bill.
That's right.
Protecting vulnerable women. Do you think that any of them would have either the courage to vote in favor of your bill? And would Mr. Trudeau or Mr. Singh, would they allow their members to vote in favor of this pro-woman bill?
That's a very good question that I wish I had a very secure answer to, but I don't. You know, even as these women supported it when I raised it in the House, at that point in time, it was brand new and they did not have that pressure from their party leaders. I would certainly hope that they would. Occasionally, we have seen that happen on different bills where it's clear that they made a choice to stand against or for something that their leadership did not agree with. So that is the hope. Also, an interesting thing has happened because with Cassie and Molly's Law, Jeff Durham was the father in that circumstance and partner. And, you know, he has carried on doing what he can to keep this in front of Canadians. And with this bill, you know, he is pro-choice. And I am pro-life. We both know that. And it hasn't impacted our ability to work together on this issue. And so what he has done is a pro-life folks created a petition to present in the House on my bill from their perspective of why we need to support it. And he wrote one as well from, sorry, pro-life. He wrote one from pro-choice perspective. And saying basically what's happened is that within that movement or the political appearance of that movement, they're not recognizing or valuing a woman's choice to carry a child to term. Mm-hmm. We've seen less and less of a focus on valuing women who are having children. And so he wrote up a petition, and both of them are on my website, and they're both on Molly Matters. He posted both petitions.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Because the whole point there is we agree across Canada on this issue. Yeah. And so I'm very excited to have those petitions come forward. The original one has to come to my office. If you photocopy it, I can't present it in the House. It has to be original signatures.
Okay.
And we look forward to presenting both of those petitions in the House in regard to the bill.
Wonderful. Yeah, well, that's something that we can be involved in across the country then. Great news. And we will want to put a link to that in our show notes for this interview.
Sure. Wonderful. And, you know, the thing is, too, as this bill is presented, we need to be reaching across beyond our own comfort zones, I guess, is what I would say. And so Jeff has stressed on his website, Molly Matters, that, you know, they're two totally different petitions that came from different places. So if you agree with what is said on, you can sign either one or both.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well,
it's a unique scenario, but it's very,
well,
very
that's
encouraging.
Very good. And I would like to think of the House of Commons. I know it is not that way today. I would like to think of it as a place where members represent their constituents and their own convictions, rather than the views of their party leader or the inner circle that directs them. Otherwise, why do we need 338 members of parliament if it's only going to be Mr. Trudeau and Mr. Singh and Mr. Polly of directing traffic? And is body, my body, my choice, this whole concept certainly should apply directly to this case where you're seeking to protect women. It's their body. They deserve not to be attacked in any, never, in, pregnant or not
Exactly.
pregnant, but certainly a pregnant woman has additional vulnerabilities. And it's very interesting that the same prime minister and some of those close to him think that you don't have a choice about what goes into your body when it comes to vaccination and things like that. They can really talk out of both sides of their mouth on that issue.
True.
I've heard a lot of discussion about that, and people that I'm involved with in the freedom movement are concerned that we should have sovereignty over our own body, and that means someone else may not attack us, may not abuse us physically or emotionally. When does so you've had first reading. When does it come to second reading? Do you know?
It should be towards the end of May.
Okay.
So that'll be announced as well on my website, and we'll try to keep it in front of people through some video clips and different things like that, and announcements out to the communities, of course, that do support
Sure.
me in this effort.
Do you have any anxiety that we would be in a federal election by then, or do you think that's not very likely?
Well, that's a very good question. There is, I think, in light of all the other issues before us right now, including this, concern about interference, foreign interference, that is a big issue in the House of Commons and across Canada right now. So I don't know if he's going to move towards an election, but there's also a possibility of proroguing Parliament.
Oh,
So,
I hadn't really thought much about that one.
yes. So that doesn't shut my bill down. That doesn't prevent it from going forward once proroguing ends. But if he does call an election, or if the NDP finally decide to act as opposition, and they do need to move to that point before an election is called, or they're pretty well done. So obviously, the budget is coming up. That would be quite remarkable if they did step forward now, but I'm not sure that we can expect that, unfortunately. But if it happens, we're ready.
I asked my local MP, Taylor Bachrach, when he and his caucus were gonna, his colleagues were gonna stop propping up this wicked prime minister. I mean, there's so much damage has been done and is being
Yes.
done to our country under the current regime. He said, "Well, the people don't want an election." I said that's true, but they do want to get rid of the dictatorship that we're finding ourselves under today.
Yeah, I think they're more ready for it now than they were in 2021 when he decided to pull an election at that point in time. I think Canadians are, as we're seeing a loss of our freedoms, we're seeing control, we're seeing, an indifference to the value of life, not just at conception, but also, in the way that their views on MAID and making it available to those who are have disabilities, or are younger, or have mental health issues. Canadians do not agree with where this government is going, and they didn't end it. They just prolonged it for another year before they fully intend to make the same decision and use this time to kind of I think condition Canadians and children, especially around MAID, like writing books for children and this type of thing. So it's very disconcerting, and I think Canadians are at a point where they see on a global scale, even our own sovereignty being attacked. So
Absolutely.
I think the country is ready for an election.
We are experiencing this wave. I want to call it a wave of nausea, but this dictatorship being expressed in so many ways. But it is really a culture of death. The pronouncements coming from the Prime Minister's office are so focused on death, dying, and disfiguring of human bodies in our country. The attack on creation, really, on God's design, male and female. We've recently launched a campaign. We just have a poster says a woman is an adult female. I mean, it's so simple. That's the way God designed things. But this prime minister will stand there and say, "Trans women are women." Excuse me, that's presuming quite a bit to make that statement.
Well, and the science and the feedback that is growing from young women who did transition and now deeply, deeply regret it. That community is growing larger and larger all the time. And, there's definitely a realization, I think, that this is a huge experiment. It is going to go down in history as a terrible, terrible circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely. So other issues that are out there, we're facing huge inflation. And, I tend to ascribe a lot of the blame for that on the carbon tax. Also, the careless manner in which the prime minister and its finance minister have thrown around taxpayers' money over the past few years on really, I think, mostly fruitless attempts or, not very successful attempts to stem the damage of COVID. Maybe you have some comments about the inflationary cycle that we're in today.
Sure. Yeah. You hear the truth that it's the worst that we've seen in 40 years. Well, I remember 40 years ago when Pierre Elliott Trudeau was in power. And the same thing took place where interest rates actually rose to 22%.
Well, yeah.
And inflation was this high. And so what we have is his son doing the same things. They actually, the truth of the matter is that he has spent the most of any prime minister and taken us into deeper debt than all the others combined. And, not only just spending Canadian tax dollars, but also going into debt and printing money, which has really put our nation in a difficult place. And proof of that, too, is in, it is unfathomable to see the number of Canadians that do need a food bank and cannot afford to heat their homes and cannot afford to put gas in their cars. And all of this due to domestic decisions. This is not due to the circumstances around COVID or the international war. As we've said in the House, we sell grain. We don't import from Ukraine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they blame the war. Well, no, these are all issues that are not impacting Canadians. So Canadians are in very high debt themselves. He also championed that interest rates were going to stay low, and that's why he could afford to borrow all this money, and Canadians followed suit. A lot of young people that, now are paying, they're not even paying the interest on their mortgage. So that interest is being added to their mortgage. So it's terrible times for Canadians, there's no question. And the carbon tax is definitely, as you say, Rod, it's a huge part of that. The goal of a carbon tax is to force a change in behavior in circumstances, quite honestly, where the majority of Canadians cannot change that behavior.
You know
what it's like in rural Canada. And one thing I do love to say is we tend to look east and blame everything on the east versus the west, and our thinking as far as voting is incredibly different. But at the same time, I have come to realize that in rural Ontario, rural Quebec, rural Canada, we all are facing the same challenges of high inflation, of carbon tax, firearms regulations. All of these things are impacting in Ontario as well. So our challenge is not so much rural in different provinces. It is the large cities, right, that live very differently than we do.
Yeah,
So
it's
there's that.
amazing how the same human beings could, by living in a city, the lifestyle there tends to promote a different way of looking at the world. I don't know what it is about that, but it is certainly true that the voting is quite different in downtown Toronto than it is in the farming
But
regions.
yeah, and yet, with COVID and all of the impacts internationally with supply chains and things, it did wake a lot of people up to realize, okay, where does my food come from? And food scarcity problems, and we're certainly seeing that, with this attack on our farmers as well. That carbon tax, fertilizer limitations, all of these different things, the cost of their land is impacting potentially our ability to grow enough food for Canada, let alone to do what we do internationally.
Right. That's what's surprising about what's going on in Holland, just looking across the pond for a bit. That the government there seems to be going along the same direction as our government here, and they're wanting to limit farming, which is the source of
Right.
food, like you know,
That's right.
and
They're
source of
further down that rabbit hole even than we are at this
yeah.
point in
So it's
time.
we're in a troubled times. One thing that the Taxpayers Federation, Canadian Taxpayers Federation, has pointed out. We are spending $95 million every day servicing our debt, interest on our federal debt. And so I think most people would realize if they could, think about this, there's a lot better uses for $95 million every day than giving it to the banks, right? And
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and a lot of the spending that he has done, well, it has not contributed to the economic growth or the well-being of Canadians.
No.
And it's interesting to see even with foreign aid, where he has been sending money is not it feeds his ideologies. It isn't necessarily doing good in the way that the majority of Canadians would like to see that done. And more, there's a backlash towards supporting other countries when our own country is in the state that it's in. And I think there's some validity to that. We can certainly, see his spending and go, we can do far, far better. Just simply by making far better choices. Even with the COVID funding, yes, we needed it, but it was terribly abused because they did not manage it well.
Yeah, and the whole, I mean, the focus, the non-scientific approach that continues today, and of course resulted in the punishment of honest, hardworking Canadians with the truckers who weren't allowed to cross the border, et cetera, et cetera. And that produced, well, it resulted in, of course, the Freedom Convoy, and then the backlash to that, the crackdown in military style against peaceful Canadians. It's shocking.
Yes, I agree.
Last summer, one of those things relating to freedom, last summer, you were escorted off the Hill. Or refusing to disclose your vaccination status. And I understand from we chatted a bit before we began this interview that you were off the Hill for nearly a year. Is that correct?
Yes, it was, yes, a year. What happened is initially, after that last election, they were deciding whether or not to reopen the house, and the decision was made that you could attend in the precinct if you were vaccinated or had what's the word? Permission, because of a circumstance, right? And our speaker was responsible for bringing in this ruling, and he promised me, I actually had a really good talk with him personally, and he said, Kathy, the only person on the Hill who can make a decision as to whether or not you should have an exemption is the medical professional, and that was the health nurse on the Hill. And so that was done really, really well. And actually, I did have an exemption, which meant I could go into the house. And then the Prime Minister was not happy with those exemptions. So he basically, well, what happened is our party challenged them even being able to do that. And the Speaker ruled with us, which then threw it out. But instead of it just coming from the Board of Internal Economy, a motion was brought to the floor of the House. And at that point, it was voted in favor, and he changed the exemption rules to be even stiffer. And at that point, then what he did is had the political arm override the supposed science, even though they claimed that science is their source. So then I lost my exemption, and as did a few other people, and we didn't disclose our status. So I was not allowed in my own office for an entire year, let alone in the House of Commons or in committee rooms. And I traveled, and of course he shut down air flights and trains. So I drove back and forth 3.5 days each direction, plus getting to Winnipeg to get a car, I guess. Through the winter, my husband did drive with me, and well, and then we would leave the car in Ottawa and get one when we needed it to go back. But unfortunately, our rental folks, they couldn't get parts, they couldn't fix cars, and they couldn't buy cars. So they all decided you couldn't take a car out of a province unless you brought it right back. Well, that didn't work. So I ended up staying for quite a while in Ottawa. And in June, I just decided this past June, this is enough already. I am going to walk into the House of Commons. So I did walk in, and first of all, I went to my caucus meeting. And this is a bit of a funny, God has a sense of humor, I guess. I was walking up the side of the building to go in the west door. And right at that moment, the Prime Minister's detail showed up. And of course, they come up in their vehicles, and then they come out and they stand, and they have their earpiece and their firearm. And there were some other folks behind me. I think they were tourists, and they just said, "Sorry, people, you'll have to wait back there for now." And I knew what it was, and I just said, "Oh, well, I'm a member." And actually, his detail escorted me into the building at that point in time. And then I did go from there to the house, and was part of the house, and I voted and everything. And of course, they're across the floor looking at me, not knowing my circumstances. Is she vaccinated? Because we don't want to make a scene, if that's the case. And so I came in and out 3 times. And then I ran into the sergeant at arms as I walked down the hallway. And I said, "Good morning," and kept going. And he turned around and he said, "Mrs. Wagenthal?" And I said, "Yes." And at that point, he said, "Please come into my office." So he did reiterate again that there was a motion, and it was determined, we need to show our papers. Was I prepared to do that? And I said, "No." He said, "Okay, well, you realize you're not supposed to be in the precinct." I said, "Yes, I understand that." And then I walked out and I went back into the house. So as long as I was in the house, I was fine. But then my whip did let me know that they had decided that when I left, they would apprehend me. So I didn't know what that meant. What does that mean, right? So and I wanted to be part of my committee. I'm on Veterans Affairs, and we were doing a service dog study. And I was doing it by Zoom, but I couldn't do it in the house, so I needed to go home. So I did leave. And as I left, I have changed my appearance a lot over the course of 8 years. I guess that's what happens more and more as you get older. And as I went out, there were guards at the door, at the top of the stairs, bottom of the stairs, outside, and they were all holding their phone because they're looking for me. But I didn't look like any of the pictures that they had. So I just walked out, which was kind of fun. But then as I walked down the hill, the sergeant at arms was on the hill, and he recognized me. And at that point, he and a couple of other precinct officers walked me to my car just to make sure I didn't go in my office or anywhere else. So we had a talk on the way down the hill, and I don't blame these people. I
No.
lay this at the feet of our prime minister.
Yeah.
And at that point, then I decided it was time to do some media and talk about it. And the media was very positive and supportive, quite honestly. And CPAC aired the entire thing, which, gave me the opportunity for everyone to see the entire picture. And I was still driving at that point. It was the end of the term for the summer, so I was heading home when my whip called me and asked where I was, because he had said I could go early. And when I said Thunder Bay, he said, "Oh, the Prime Minister, it appears, is lifting the travel bans, and we'll know tomorrow if he's lifting the rules on the precinct." And I had challenged him because I sat next to him at the prayer breakfast, 3 blocks from the hill, with no problems. And I could go anywhere in Ontario, no problem, but just not there. And so he did finally lift those rules. But of course, we were going into the summer at
Yeah.
that point in time.
So much has happened in recent months. So much science has become more readily available.
Yes.
And of course this is the real science, and it contradicts the narrative that the government and most of the provincial governments have been adhering to for some time. The Prime Minister himself, so supposedly vaccinated, and boosted, has claimed to have COVID several times. Was one of the excuses given why he couldn't meet with the truckers and whatever.
That's right.
President Biden has had COVID, and it's, so the narrative is so strange that they would continue, and still the boosters are being pushed in different places in spite of all this evidence. It's quite strange, and the whole concept, your body, your body, your choice, that has been completely, left to the side during this time.
Well, and even as I stood there, and yes, it's been very difficult for me. The media didn't realize that I couldn't even go into my own office and work with my staff. But that being said, what I experienced was not what so many Canadians faced. When you have nurses and doctors that worked through all of this long before that vaccine even arrived, properly. All the right PPE, taking their risks as they do, and then to be told after that, that their jobs were extinguished if they weren't willing to comply. Same with our armed forces. They were not required until going into that 2021 election, when he saw that this was a tool that he could use in the election campaign. But of course, he couldn't say that and allow his armed forces to not be forced to be vaccinated. So we've lost, through attrition and through that circumstance, a great number of our armed forces. And then there are those with the injuries. We have fighter jets that can't be flown. You don't learn to do that overnight.
Yeah.
So there's just on every front, people have suffered greatly because of taking that stand.
Yeah. Well,
To not
here
choose
on
to
the
be
left
vaccinated.
coast in BC, our medical personnel has still not been rehired. BC, and it's purely an ideological thing. It's a purely a vindictive thing coming from the government of BC and our public health officer here. They have hired back other government workers, but not healthcare workers in British Columbia. And it's really tragic to see this kind of, childish behavior. But it's childish, but it's very damaging. Like usually when children are childish, they get over it, and life moves on. But when people's lives are destroyed, their careers are destroyed, families are impacted, it's not always that easy to recover. And we're short of doctors and nurses here in BC now. We were before COVID, and now that has been greatly.
It's a chronic problem.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kathy, we want to post notice. There is a petition on getting back to C311.
Sure.
The petition is available on your website.
Yes, it's just kathywagenthal.ca. And my
and
name
Kathy
is a little unique. Yeah, Cathay. And Wagenthal is all A's as well. Wagenthall. I guess you can post it. And there is a section there, Bill C-311, Violence Against Pregnant Women Act, and the information is there.
Yeah.
I'd encourage people too, if they want to go to mollymatters.org. Jeff has been through a lot, and he highlights a lot of the stories and the crimes that have taken place. And it just is, yeah, could use some encouragement, I'm sure.
Yeah, very, very good. Well, we certainly wish you the best with your bill. I hope that members of the House will recognize the absurdity of not supporting, this tremendous bill that is meant to protect vulnerable pregnant women. And I hope that they are willing to, they will recognize their responsibility. Every member of Parliament has been given a tremendous responsibility. God has allowed them the privilege of serving in this country and serving their constituents, as well as serving morality and decency and common sense. And so I hope that you get good support for your bill, and that it is one that passes and becomes law.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your audience and your prayers.
Thank you very much. Kathy Wagenthal, Member of Parliament for Yorkton Melville in Saskatchewan. And Kathy, you are one of my heroes in Parliament. And I really appreciate how you have served not only your constituents, but all those who value life and the family in this country. Thank you.
Thank you.